barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
It is Thursday, September 8th. Welcome to Menace to Sports. Dabo got paid, Chris. He got himself the bag. He secured it. He is taking it to the bank, laughing his nuts off. Oh, man, we got an action-packed show today. I am going to break down for you. This is what I'm most excited about is you know, this space, YouTube and podcasts and Twitter, it's all clickbait oriented, right? It's like you put out a show title and you do this and people click on it because it's hot button, right? And I can't stand it, but I'm finding a way to utilize the clickbait world we live in, but still deliver good content on the other side, not just TMZ fucking garbage. So we're going to discuss Dabo's new contract. We're going to discuss the game of the week, Kentucky, Florida, and then I'm going to break down for you, in my opinion, how to beat Bama, right? Because I've
beat
done it.
Bama.
I've done it once, and it's happened not many times over the last decade. But I think there's a method and a way to do it. Now it's easy to just say this is how you do it. Now to go out and execute and actually beat Bama is a motherfucker. Like obviously, you could see that nationally every year they lose maybe two games in their worst year. So I'm going to give you my blueprint to beat Nick Saban and beat Bama, Chris. That's what I want to go with today. But I want to start by saying this. Fuck the algorithms, because YouTube has them. Apple Podcasts have them. They all have algorithms. So there is an initiative, a directive for Menace Army, the Menace Army, everyone out there that is a listener to the show, whether you're on Patreon in the VIP section or you just tune in on podcasts or on YouTube, I have a directive for you. I need you to go to wherever you listen to it, Spotify, iTunes, doesn't matter. Go there, leave a 5-star review, and drop a comment. What you love about the show. Or how about this? Here's what I want, Chris. Give a 5-star review, and then I want you to roast Chris. Flame Chris in the comments.
Damn, that's a straight bullet. That's a straight bullet for no reason.
So go roast Chris on your podcast app and give us a 5-star review. I'm trying to fuck the algorithm up and jump. We're in the top 200 podcasts. We always are. But I'm trying to level it way up because our listens are going crazy. So do that for me. Also, the demographics are fucked up. 97% male. Every man listening to this show, I need you to contact your wife, your girlfriend, your sister, somebody that is a female, and tell them that they should listen to this show because we only have 3% women in here. And I love women. Chris, you love women?
Yeah.
I feel like this would be a good show for a woman that loves college football to learn about football. So Absolutely. Tag a woman, tell a woman. I'm trying to get that right. And then the other demographic is college age kids. I see the demographics. We're like 25 to 55 is our sweet spot. I need those college age kids. So if you got a son, a nephew, a friend's kid, tell a college age kid about this show. Just send them the link, send them the YouTube channel or send them the podcast. So I had to get that out of the way, Chris. How are you doing on this fine thirsty Thursday?
I'm great, man. I went on a walk today. You know, I got to enjoy the sunset and from the office. But no, I'm feeling good. I'm a little tired. We were in a space yesterday. Got real ignorant.
Really?
I'm a little exhausted, but I'm happy. I see our guy, our newest subscriber, Urban Meyer, is back in the chat. Shout out to everybody, say nice to my guy, Urban Meyer. And we're in this thing, man. College football midseason. Let's get it.
Let's get it, Chris. So I want to start off with our partner, MyBookie, who's been a partner with the show forever, and unbelievable feedback from the subscribers that have signed up. I need you to go to mybookie.ag and sign up right now. Use a promo code Menace and you get a free deposit match. But I wanted to throw up there while you're there. I give you my parlays. Like I give you the bet And this is the bet that hit last week. If you didn't bet it, I don't know what you're doing. You need to be on MyBookie. It's an easy site, great to use. They give you free money. Go lock in the bet that I'm about to give you. So that was the bet last week. You should have money sitting in your MyBookie account right now. I need you to go take this. And I don't know if I'm going to parlay this. This is really up to you. But I'm going to play these three plays. Hawaii plus 51.5 against Michigan. That is way too high. Michigan is not winning this game 60-0. So I'm taking Hawaii plus 51.5 over at MyBookie. I'm taking the Wake Vandy under 65.5 and South Carolina plus 8 against Arkansas at home. I don't see how there's no respect given to South Carolina. I don't know if they'll win the game. There's a lot of value in taking money line though, but plus 8 South Carolina over Arkansas with the spread. That's my play on MyBookie. So go over to mybookie.ag, sign up now with promo code Menace, get your free deposit match, and let's gamble on some fucking sports. And we got the NFL this weekend. Like, come on now. NFL money line parlays, two leg parlays on MyBookie. That's the go-to.
Zach, before we get into the college football, I want to start with the youth sports league.
Oh, yeah.
It feels like every single month we've got a new story about a youth whatever and kind of the issues that are there. You got the video up, man. I'll let you just cue and talk about it.
Here's my issue, and there's I'm sure there's a lot of youth sports parents out here. I have three kids now in youth sports, and my oldest son is now 12, pushing 13. And so, you know, these parents are getting pretty competitive. And I've seen it all. Yelling at umpires, disparaging other teams' players. I mean, just disgusting behavior. I am the first to be a fan, right? To yell and scream, but I never get derogatory towards umpires, referees, or opposing kids, by God. But this video of this dad, I need Menace Army to find this motherfucker because he's a bitch. First thing, I'm going to preface it. We're going to watch it twice. This dad's son started a physical altercation, started it. And then the dad had the audacity to storm the court and do this. Watch this shit. He storms the court. And I'm going to break this down so many ways. One, his kid's a little bitch and deserves to get his ass whooped. Like he's going to get fucked up by somebody one day when daddy's not there, and he's going to earn every fucking punch that lands on that little tiny face. He's going to earn it and deserve it because he's a bully. What are you shoving people in a basketball game for?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's number one. Number two, the referee comes over to break it up, kind of stumbles and the kid falls down. It was unintentional. He wasn't trying to hit the kid or push him, right? And the dad storms the court pissed and then runs over a completely different referee that had nothing to do with it. Watch it again. He just melees this other referee. Big bitch energy. That guy is a big bitch. And his whole family is a bunch of bitches. Obviously, the kid's pushing kids after the play because he's frustrated, probably because he's not any good. He probably lost a fucking dribble off his foot and it was a turnover. And then he had to push somebody because he wasn't any good. But this is nonsense. There's no place for this in sports. And I want to know who this guy is. So Menace Army, get to work. We'll have him on the show. I want to hear his big bitch energy right here, live and in person. So I had to throw that up there because I can't stand the way people act at youth sports. They are kids playing a sport. And if my kid ever pushed a kid like that after the play, holy shit, no one. The referees wouldn't be in trouble. The coaches wouldn't be in trouble. My kid would get grabbed by his jersey and pulled out to the car, and we'd go home. And we'd have a nice long conversation about how to be a good sport and have sportsmanship. And you know what? You make people pay with your play. You don't fight. You don't push. You don't play dirty. You go dunk on somebody. You go put up 30 points and let them know like you're not going to do whatever pissed you off. It's just it's sad, the state of youth sports nowadays. So it's awful.
It's frustrating because what are we teaching our kids? Like obviously like that behavior is learned from somewhere and it like doesn't benefit anything. Because for 99% of kids, like grown up, truth or not, or whether you believe this or not, your kid's not going to make the league. So what traits can we equip him with along the way that can positively affect his life moving forward? Like when I was playing baseball, Zach, I knew I was going to the MLB. And my mom knew that as well. But the thing about it was she knew I was going to learn a lot of skills there and how to be a better person And that was kind of the driving factor of keeping me in baseball.
It's unreal.
And so that should be the goal. And people keep forgetting that.
I mean, we got Aqib Talib's brother shooting a coach and killing him down in South Florida. I forget the story. I just heard a story. There was a youth game with where there was a bunch of gunshots, and now they're the places that own these fields, they're not letting youth sports teams play on the fields because of the liability. Someone might get shot down in South Florida. Like, youth sports are being canceled in South Florida because these fucking dads can't keep their gun in their fucking holster at a youth sports game. Like, just disgusting human beings in the world.
And all it does is hurt the kids. That's all it does. I want to hit a couple of these super chats and then get into the show. Our guy, Michael, Broncos knowledge is greater than Desmond Howard's. Man, I will not stop until we have Bronco, Urban, and Cade Club Dick all in here at the same time.
We need them all.
That's all I want. We'll hit this one a little bit later in the show. I wouldn't worry about it too much. Thank you, Adam, for the two. Hey, take it. What do you think? There's no way to know is the answer. Does Michigan beat Ohio State with JJ Stark?
I've said before, I think Michigan's an 11-0 football team going into that game. I think their best chance at winning against teams like Ohio State is with JJ McCarthy. But, you know, there's so much to learn about both teams from now until then. But yes, Michigan's best chance at beating Ohio State is with JJ McCarthy. That is a fact.
Absolutely fair. All right, Zach, something crazy happened, man. There's this cool thing that happens every now and again where you talk shit or are real about us up a situation, and then that person just glows up automatically right afterwards. And it happened again yesterday or 2 days ago. You talked about Dabo Swinney because obviously we saw that putrid performance against Georgia Tech in the first half, and I love Georgia Tech, but they're not a good football team yet, and Clemson's supposed to be one of the elites, so we judge them under an elite eye. And now you said that someone at Clemson listened to the show. They say, you know what, we're gonna show Zach Smith. And so there it is. Dabo Swinney gets $115 million, making him the highest paid coach in college athletics, Zach, just to spite you.
Just below Nick Saban. No one's allowed to be higher paid than Nick Saban. But man, it's what a travesty. Like, I don't know what Clemson sees that is going on, because right now Dabo Swinney's momentum is in a negative direction, right? And why they felt the need to give him this type of contract extension? Like, where the fuck was Dabo going? Like, are they worried about him? The only school that I've ever heard that Clemson was worried about Dabo leaving for was Alabama. Nick Saban is not retiring in the near future. You did not have to extend him with this atrocious amount of money. Because here's the reality. Clemson is in a wait and see period. They've certainly fallen off the cliff a little bit. They're holding on by one hand, but they are not what they were 3 years ago. The landscape has changed entirely, from NIL collectives to transfer portal rules changing to, I mean, everything that's going on. So in this day and age, Dabo Swinney has been behind the times in adjusting. I did hear that they have an NIL building getting built, which who gives a fuck about a building? I want to know how much money they're raising and what are they going to do in recruiting and to keep their current roster as is, right? Now, Clemson has had a good track record of kids not transferring out, but I will reference Darian Kendrick, who went to Georgia, and there's been other ones. But this is just absurd, because you look at the momentum. Where is the program headed, right? Mm-hmm. Let's look at how is the program as a developmental program, right? You get these good recruits. How do you develop them? They're the 42nd best program in college football at developing kids for the next level. The 42nd best program in college football at developing talented kids for the NFL, right? If you compare the rivals or the recruiting rankings with the NFL draft, they're the 42nd best developmental program in the country. Then you look at recruiting. They've recruited well, right? You can't deny that Dabo has done a great job in recruiting. I would contend they lost their best recruiters. And they we'll get to it in a minute. They didn't replace them with ace recruiters, right? You look at the trend. They were had the third class in the country in 2020, fifth in 2021, 10th in 2022. They're eighth right now with 20 commits. So it's trending the wrong direction. You look at their performance on the field. I know Trevor Lawrence left. I don't give a shit. They got a five-star quarterback in DJ Uiagalelei, and their performance on the field has also slid. So why are we paying Dabo Swinney $115 million when, by any realistic look, his program is going the wrong direction. I know he's done what he's done at Clemson. I'm not saying he should be fired. He deserves time to figure this shit out. I don't believe he will figure it out, but he certainly doesn't need a contract extension when you lose guys like Jeff Scott, Tony Elliott, Brent Venables, and you replace them with the fucking Stranger Things cast. There is 2 years of on-field experience between those four and CJ Spiller prior to arriving and coaching on the field at Clemson. It doesn't matter if you think they're a good coach or they know football. You have to learn how to run a meeting room, lead young men.
Yeah.
You have to learn how to develop trust with your players. You have to learn how to go on the road and recruit. It's not a learning experience when you're at a place like Clemson.
No, you don't
it's
cut not time your teeth to, at Clemson.
It's not time to cut your teeth. It's not. You can't be wet behind the ears. Your first job is Clemson. If you want Clemson to be a top five program continually, right? This is where Urban Meyer fucked up and several twice in his career. And this is where Nick Saban never fucks up. Nick Saban loses a great coach, Kirby Smart, right? He immediately, look at his offensive coordinators from Mike Locksley, Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian. Like every single time, it's a big time coach who's proven, who's done it, and is a great recruiter. Dabo Swinney replaced guys that did a great job at getting that program to the top of the mountain. And when those guys left, which is inevitable, that will always happen when a program elevates like Clemson did, he replaced them with fucking interns. It's like, that's not how you maintain that high, high level of success.
Mm-hmm.
So from staffing changes to NIL money to transfer portal utilization, Dabo has failed in all three areas. Again, listen to what I'm saying. That doesn't mean that Dabo is awful and needs to be fired. It means you don't need to reward him right now. You need to see if he's going to climb back up that mountain that he's fallen off of. Because if he doesn't, now you're going to have to pay him a shitload of money when it's his time to leave, right? It'll be Eddie O all over again, right? Like, okay, what time do you want me out of here and which door do you want me to leave through, right? It's unreal that they gave him this contract, but hey, if I'm Ryan Day, if I'm any other Kirby Smart, if I'm any of these other coaches, I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, Dabo. You just gave me some serious leverage.
Mm-hmm. Gave me some leverage and, you know, something to be excited about. Now, I will ask you, Zach, and the philosophy of contracts. Should coaches get paid for what they've done or should they get paid for projection? Because that's kind of what this contract felt like for me.
Well, they get paid for market value, right?
Okay.
Coaches get paid that type of money because that school does not want to lose that coach. And it could be because of proven results or it could be because of projection. Because if you look at this, college football, look at the demise of Florida. They had Steve Spurrier. Ron Zook was okay. Urban Meyer comes in, takes Florida to new heights. Heights that they've never been, right? Every year in the national championship conversation. Won two national championships in 3 years. Like, took them to a new height. And then when he left, they made hiring error after hiring error. And now Florida is in a fight for like third place in the SEC East. There's not a lot of great head coaches out there. Mm. And so if you feel like you have one, you're going to break the bank to either get them or keep them. Why do you think USC spent the money on Lincoln Riley? Because since Pete Carroll left, that program has been in fucking terrible
disarray, right?
Disarray. And that's why they broke the bank on Lincoln Riley, because they said, you know what? I think this is one of the top five coaches in college football. I think he's a national championship caliber coach. We'll do anything to have him because we've tasted greatness. We want to get back there, right? And that's how it works. And so it could be based on projected success or it could be based on proven success. All that matters is they want to be these college programs that, you know, these blue bloods, these big college programs, they want to be in the upper echelon of college football. And they'll pay and do anything to get there. And so what this means is Clemson feels like Dabo is still that guy. I disagree. No, mm-hmm. I could be wrong. I think they're wrong, but I need to see something. And it's not going to happen with the cast of Stranger Things. Brandon Streeter's not going to go get you the next Trevor Lawrence or the next, you know, he's not going to develop the next Deshaun Watson. It's not going to happen.
So here's what people are going to do when they see this clip, Zach. Clemson fans especially, they're going to cite the record. They're going to cite some of the star draft picks they have in the league. They're going to cite the rings. They're going to cite 31-0 over Ohio State.
Absolutely.
Because they think that we are just bashing this, you know, coach like he's no good. We're not saying he's not a good coach. But fair or not, there's a stratosphere to college football. And in that upper echelon, once you win a title or multiple titles, you will be judged amongst the elite of the elite. For some schools, a successful season is a top 15 finish. But once you enter that next level, you will be critiqued like a top 15 finish is not exactly a successful season. Like for us last year, that wasn't a super successful season because it didn't end in a championship. So that's what we're judging Dabo on. And of the four teams that I put in the stratosphere, if you want to put the four teams there, Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, and Clemson, Zach, who has the worst staff?
Oh, it's not even close. Clemson, not even close. And I guess that's to my point. These coaches get these contracts based on projected success. That's what it is.
And supposed to be. That's what it's supposed to be.
Well, that's what it's supposed to be. And you look at it, and a lot of times it's because they've had success, right? Like Lincoln Riley, they projected he'd have this level of success at USC because he's had a lot of success at Oklahoma, right? So there was reasoning behind it. Ryan Day, Gene Smith projected he had would have a lot of success because he got to know him as a football coach and said, this guy's really good. I think he's going to have unbelievable success. It's all about projected success. And right now, I don't see in any way, shape, or form how you could project that Dabo Swinney will be in a national championship game again because his staff is ass. The NIL collective, they're getting it going, but they're way behind a lot of schools. They're not doing the amount of numbers that Ohio State, Alabama.
They're not innovative with it. They're watching what other people do and seeing, okay, we can adopt this without like breaking our little Christian cult. We can do this without upsetting this.
The third point here is they're not attacking the portal like these great teams are, like Alabama has done, right? And there is a point there that Clemson doesn't need to attack it as hard because they don't have a lot of kids that transfer out and they do a good job consistently recruiting, but you have to utilize it. You have to leverage it. I mean, just look at Ohio State from Justin Fields to Tanner McAllister to Chip Trainum. Like they are
Jonah Jackson. I mean,
Jonah Jackson was a great one, a great one. They're getting pieces here and there. Shit, Michigan center, the kid from Virginia. Really good.
We just
player.
Saw Notre Dame. Notre Dame just went and got the safety from Northwestern. That's Notre Dame.
Right. I mean, every program is utilizing it to fill a need here or there. Clemson's really not. Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying that Clemson won't have success. I'm not saying that Dabo won't figure it out, turn it around, and get the job done and be back up there in the upper echelon. I'm just saying there's no fucking reason to pay him like he's doing that now. He's not. It's trending the wrong direction. Wait a year. See how this year goes. Because there's a chance after what I watched on fucking Saturday that Clemson has another awful fucking year by that same standard. So I just don't think he should have got paid right now. I think they should have waited a year and see if he can start leveling back up, come back up off this downswing. If he does, then pay him. There's no reason to pay him right now.
Here we go. This is a question that they want us to answer. Zach, Urban, Chris, triple threat, ladder match. Who's winning that? I don't know what that even means.
Yeah, I don't know what a triple threat ladder match is. I assume it's some kind of fight, and I am definitely walking out of that.
I mean, I'll probably just walk out by myself. Like, I don't even want to fight. I don't even want to fight. All right, Zach, moving forward a little bit. Dabo and Clemson. So a couple things. Is Dabo an elite enough head coach to not have an elite staff? Do those exist?
No, they don't exist.
There are times. They don't exist.
I mean, you can win a lot of games, but you're never going to be. We're talking about the upper echelon, right? We're talking about college football playoffs and national title contention. That's what we're talking about. Like Ohio State, we had a disjointed offensive staff in 2015 and 16. We had a disjointed defensive staff in 16, 17. So, you know, you could still win a lot of games, but you're not going to be in the national title contention. If that's the standard, you have to have a great staff. Look at Kirby Smart with Dan Lanning and the whole staff at Georgia. Look at Nick Saban.
Will Muschamp as an analyst. That's absurd.
And you just think about it. Like Alabama has been in contention every year for one main reason. Mm-hmm. Nick Saban is the best coach in the history of college football at compiling a legit staff. That's why. You can say what you want about everything else they do. They are in it year in, year out because his staff year in, year out is one of the best in college football. He never makes a bad hire. And it's a bad deal.
Does Clemson have the second best staff in the ACC or do they have the best staff in the ACC? Because I think Miami staff might be better than Clemson staff.
I mean, I would really have to look at it. But the answer is no. They have 2 years of coaching experience on offense. Fucking two at Clemson. They got to have the worst coaching staff in the ACC. I mean, you could maybe make a case that like someone else has a worse coaching staff, but the shit I watch on offense is disgusting. The scheme doesn't even make sense. DJ doesn't know where to go with the ball. He's looking all over the place. Guys aren't fucking open. Like, the offensive staff might be the worst offensive staff in college football.
That's a shame, man. Quincy Avery tweeted out basically talking about quarterbacks. If your son was a quarterback, you could pick any school in the country, what school would you want him to pick and rank your top three?
So obviously there is a little bias here, but I would go Ryan Day in Ohio State 1, Lincoln Riley. No, I'll go Steve Sarkisian, Texas 2, and Lincoln Riley and USC 3.
Your fourth be?
Ooh. No, that's where it gets a little tricky.
Because my fourth is Alabama.
Probably
because I know Alabama. That Nick Saban's always going to have an elite coach there.
Yep.
That's where I'll go. And then probably after that, I wouldn't go Georgia. But again, the point of that being is it wouldn't be Clemson.
No, God, no.
Clemson wouldn't even be in the conversation.
No chance.
And that's kind of the growing issue. And I know Clemson fans are going to be mad at us for kind of calling it how it is. But the simple fact of the matter is,
oh, fuck them fans if they can't see reality. See, I don't give a shit about that. It's like when Texas had Tom Herman and I was honest about it. They all come back and say sorry later. You'll come back and say sorry later. Brandon Streeter is the worst fucking quarterback coach, and you're pissed off that Dabo even hired him. That'll happen. So you can fuck us. That's fine. You'll come back and say sorry. Don't worry.
Well, it could be fuck you, but it should be fuck me. What's it fuck me for? Oh, brother. All right, Zach. You kind of put this in here because I guess you did some additional studying. Things through a different eye. I want to get your take because you want to talk about Bama and how you would beat Bama, the Bama code. What is it? The Da Vinci code?
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's just
shit for us.
So I after yesterday's show where we kind of broke down the Bama Texas game, I went in and I said, all right, how can they beat Bama? Right. Never mind the fact that Bama's supremely talented. They're far more talented than Texas. Right. Mm-hmm. So this is not going to play out in this game, but just historically, how have teams beaten Nick Saban? How did they beat Bama? And you look at the two losses last year, Texas A&M during the regular season, and then Georgia in the national championship game. And there was two areas, and this is not that innovative, but it's crazy how consistent it is both teams could threw the ball well on Alabama, and both teams won the turnover battle. And that has been consistent over the history of Nick Saban's tenure. Texas A&M, they won the turnover battle 2-1, and they threw for over 9 yards per attempt. You go to Georgia in the national championship game. They threw for almost 9 yards per attempt and won the turnover battle 2-1. And then you go back and look through the history of Nick Saban's tenure. 29-24, Texas A&M beat him in 2012. 8.2 yards per attempt, 3 turnovers to none. Mm. 2013, Oklahoma beat him 45-31. Almost 8 yards per attempt, 5 turnovers to 1. 2014, we beat him, Ohio State, 7.1 yards per attempt, 3-2 turnover ratio. You look at 2014 Ole Miss, 23-17. Ole Miss beat Alabama. They averaged 8.1 yards per attempt, 2-1 turnover ratio. You go then to 2015. Ole Miss beat them back-to-back, 43-37. 10.3 yards per attempt, 5 turnovers to none. Clemson in 2016, 35-31, 7.4 yards per attempt. And this is the only game of all their losses that Clemson actually lost the turnover battle. And then I could keep going. 2019, Clemson beat the brakes off of them, 44-16. They averaged 10.8 yards per attempt with 2-0 turnovers. So the moral of the story is you have to win the turnover battle by not turning the ball over and creating turnovers by Alabama's offense. And then you have to throw the football on them. Fuck running the ball on them. Pete Golding's 3-4 defense, the big-ass D lineman, their front seven's fucking legit. I mean, you got to run the ball, but you're not going to have success on them. I don't give a shit who you are. Those teams I mentioned, very few of them had success running the ball. You have to be able to throw it on them. And that's why looking at this game and all future Bama games this season, it's going to come down to, can the quarterback and receiver skill set, can they throw the ball? Can they? I think you have to average over 8 yards per attempt. And if you do and you protect the football, you're in the game. You got a chance. You're going to beat Bama. And so you look at a guy like Xavier Worthy at Texas and Quinn Ewers. Can they feed that motherfucker the ball and average over 8 yards per attempt? If they can, Texas will be in the game. If they can't throw it on that secondary, which that secondary is legit, then there's no chance.
Yeah. So you think just opening it up and airing it out? I guess the fear with that is like letting Will Anderson go. But this is interesting, Zach, because you kind of painted this picture. You have to be willing and able to throw the ball. Now, the other part of it is this could be a mirror reflection, because how does Nick Saban, his defensive philosophy work? Stop the pass and then deal with the run.
Well, and that's that's part of the reason why that is the formula, right? Because Nick Saban's entire defensive structure is designed around stopping the pass first. So if you're able to pass, if you're able to throw the ball on him, it fractures his entire defensive philosophy. And that's why you can win the game. And it'll open up run game. And keep in mind, I'm not saying you got to drop back and throw it. I'm saying screens, RPOs, like just getting the ball in the air by hook or by crook. You don't need to drop back and let Will Anderson just tee off on your fucking tackle and quarterback. That's dumb. But you have to find a way to short, easy throws, right? RPOs, bubble screens, swing screens, slip screens, and then take some shots down the field. You got to be able to do those things if you're going to beat Bama. Simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the other side of the ball, Zach, how would you attack, you know, Bama's offense, I guess? Do you kind of build it the same way? You stop their passing attack and then deal with the run? Or can you afford to do that? Or is there kind of a mismatch when it comes to like trench work?
Because I've said it all along. I think Bryce Young is the best college football player in the country, but he is that because of how what they ask him to do and how he's a baller. Like, he'll fucking take off on you. He ran for 100 yards in the opening game. He'll extend the play, get out of the pocket. I think you have to keep him in the pocket and force him to make big time throws to beat you. If you can take away the middle of the field, take away the shorter throws, keep him in the pocket, that motherfucker is going to throw the ball to you. He is. He's going to turn the ball over a little bit because he's not great at those big time throws, those deeper throws, those outside the hash throws. That's why they don't ask him to do it that much. So that is the formula to slowing down the offenses. The run game is the run game. They're loaded. They're going to run the ball. Obviously, you want to stop the run, but it's all about containing Bryce Young. Keep him in the pocket and make him make big boy throws.
Do you worry sometimes in close games, at least that's the sense that I get from Bryce Young, that sometimes he tries to play too much hero ball instead of kind of taking what the defense will give him? I know against LSU last year, it was a very tight game. It was a lot of him kind of trying to play hero ball late down the stretch. Same with that Auburn game they almost lost. And then, of course, when Jameson Williams went down, they tried the hero ball thing late and he couldn't really get after it.
Yeah, I think he's a baller. Like, he's a gunslinger. He's a playmaker. And sometimes, like Brett Favre, that can hurt you in certain facets, but you wouldn't have it any other way. You want that kid to be out there and making plays like he does, but every now and then, you know, it's going to backfire a little bit.
Based on what you said, is the team that has the best chance to maybe catch Alabama, is it Tennessee?
Not after what I just watched with Stetson Bennett and that Georgia offense against Oregon. I mean, I would have said that prior to that game.
That'll be in the championship game.
Yeah, Stetson Bennett proved to me that. I mean, he's got to do it a couple more times to prove that that is the new him, and it wasn't just one game where fluke game. But he silenced me because he made a bunch of throws and managed that offense and delivered and was fucking just dicing up Oregon's defense. Mm-hmm. I don't care how bad Oregon is. That kid played out of his fucking mind. If he plays like that down the stretch, it's gonna be a dogfight in the SEC championship game, and Georgia's going to have to do what I said. They're going to have to throw it on Bama to beat him.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to go check the rush numbers. It felt like Oregon's main priority was stopping the run that game, and then obviously things got out of hand because, you know, Georgia just simply has better players outside, whether that's tight ends, that's greater mismatches. And so I do expect kind of the new defensive norm will be to kind of stop the pass and then deal with the run, simply for the fact that I expect that kind of these elite of the elite schools will be able to stop the run with the four-man front because they're getting the best defensive linemen in the country, because there's not a ton of, you know, elite defensive tacklers. There's not a ton of elite defensive ends, and I think it'll require less scheming to stop the run, if I'm not mistaken. So I do expect kind of moving forward that to be kind of the fix. Georgia on, I guess this isn't really a Georgia question, but I wanted to ask, like, Bama and Georgia, are they still running that press man? And does that make things susceptible, or are they both kind of moved to a cover two shell to move with the
modern? No, they both play a lot of man coverage, but because they got the dudes. They got the dudes to do it. Both of them do. I mean, their secondary, both secondaries are loaded.
Bama's secondary is fucking ridiculous, dude.
Ridiculous.
It's almost absurd to look at on paper, at least.
You look at it on paper, you're like, there's seven guys that should be the first rounders.
Like, I literally have them in jerseys in my head. Like, oh, you play for the Colts, you're going to play for the Chargers. Like, they just have dudes everywhere. And it's crazy because if you can't out-muscle someone on the inside and you can't out-athlete someone on the outside, that's where shit gets really scary. I did want to mention, just because we're talking about, you know, Alabama, Zach, your guy, Josh Pate, you know what he said Texas needs to do to beat Bama? Mm-mm. That Xavier Worthy needs to be used the same way that Sark used Devontae.
Oh, I did see that. Yeah. I did see that. He's absolutely right.
Like I said, do you think Xavier Worthy can be used like that? Does he have that similar skill set?
Yeah, he could be used. I mean, he's not as good as Devontae Smith. We're not going to go there. But he absolutely will get featured like that. But make no mistake, I don't think Texas has a shot in this game. I think Alabama wins by 18 points. So this is not saying Texas has a shot. They can do it. Here's how to do it. Bama's going to roll. But that being said, that is the formula on how to beat them. And I think that, you know, Xavier Worthy's a really good player. And yes, if Texas were to pull off the fluke upset, it would have to be, like I talked about and Josh talked about, is Xavier Worthy has to go off and Quinn Ewers has to play the game. It has to be his coming out party, right? And here's what it is. You ever seen the movie Major League, Chris?
Yeah, of course.
when Wild Thing, buys into his own hype and he's wearing suits and all this other shit. And then all of a sudden he's coming in at the end of the season and they crank Wild Thing and the fan goes, Wild Thing, you stink. And he goes, fuck you. And he had the hair cut back in him. If Quinn Ewers comes out with a shaved head in pregame, fucking Texas by 20. I'm telling you, it's a Wild Thing 2.0.
I'm not even going to hold you. That would be insane. If Quinn, you were shaved the head and came
or
out
fucking like a mohawk or so, just something dramatic where you're like, this kid means business. He's coming out. He's trying to make a statement nationally that he is the number one overall recruit in the history of recruits, bitch.
What if he dyed it black? Would that have the same effect?
Anything. Nah, I just need some. Just some. I need some aesthetic change to let me know that he's ready for a career day. Mm-hmm.
All right. Zach, I'm ready to move ahead to this game. Kentucky versus Florida. Who we got? Well, thank you, Easy Eye, for the two. We're going to break this one down a little bit. And I'm really curious in your thoughts because I have no clue who you picked in this game. I have no clue.
Well, let's just talk about a couple things. One is, why do we think Kentucky's good? That's my question. My first question.
Will Levis.
Okay. So let's first look at this. Who the fuck did they beat last year? Right? Because they lost to Georgia, Mississippi State, Tennessee, three in a row. Outside of those three teams, they beat South Carolina, who was an improved South Carolina, but it still was South Carolina. They beat Dan Mullen's Florida team where the whole staff and everyone had basically already quit. They beat a bad LSU team. They beat Louisville. Iowa in the bowl game, I guess, is their signature win. Like, why do we think Kentucky's going to be good? They were not only that, did they not beat anyone last year? They lost three games in a row to three teams that outclassed them. But they're 86th in the country in returning production. So that team that had a great year, but albeit, I will claim they were overrated. Mm-hmm. None of them came back except for Will Levis. And now we're going to talk about Will Levis, the QB1, right? He's going to be an NFL quarterback. He's the most overrated quarterback in this draft class. You watch his film. You study his analytics. I don't know where we got off in calling this kid a first-round draft pick or where we started saying this kid was going to be a dominant player, great player. Kentucky has a chance to win the East. I have Kentucky as the fourth best team in the SEC East, behind Georgia, obviously, Tennessee, and Florida. And honestly, that's not even a guarantee. If Spencer Rattler realizes his talent, Kentucky might be the fifth best team in the SEC East. You look at Will Levis, 43%. This is last year, 43% on deep balls. He was a far worse quarterback versus blitz, which you guys that watch the show know, that is how I indicate if a kid's a good quarterback. If when someone blitzes you, you at least match the production versus base defense. His production decreased 10% when a team blitzed. That's when he was under pressure, he was horrible. Anytime there was free heat or a pocket starts to break down, he dropped 31% in production. So this is not the makings of a great quarterback. When he has to drop, like, think about it. He had a 2-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio last year. That's not very good. But when he just purely dropped back and throw it, not RPOs, not play action, not screens, when it was a drop back pass, he threw 10 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. That's almost a 1-to-1 ratio. So I will pose the question again. Why the fuck do we think this kid is a great quarterback?
That is a yikes. That's not ideal. That's worse than I thought. I think we see the Instagram clips. We see the size, 6'4", 230. We see the PFF. We see the projection. We think, okay, Will Levis could have some of those traits to jump out at you, and so this game could be a good game. Vegas doesn't seem to think so. I mean, well, I guess they do. It's a one-score game. Vegas has it.
Minus 5.5 at home for Florida, but I'm curious in the chat. Mm-hmm. Who do you think wins? Anthony Richardson, AR-15, University of Florida Gators, or do you think Will Levis, tongue out and all, flexing those biceps? Do you think that Kentucky can go to Gainesville and win the game? I'm curious. What do you think in the chats? Can they do it? Because here's the other thing, Chris. The other thing is this. Their defense last year was fucking terrible. I mean, awful. They were 61st in America. The way I evaluate defenses, right? 61st. How many yards per play do they get? That's what matters, right? 61st in America, 5.5 yards per play. The 47th best pass defense, 56th best run defense. Money down, third down. They couldn't get off the field. They were 68th in the country. And when teams got in the red zone, they were the 100th worst team at stopping them from scoring touchdowns. On top of all of that, Chris, they just played Miami of Ohio. A bad, bad team. Bad competition. It was 13-10 at half. The offensive skill had four drops. Kentucky and Will Levis, this fucking NFL quarterback, was 25% on third down. They ran the ball for 1.9 yards against Miami of Ohio. Miami of Ohio.
Yikes.
So my bookie lock of the fucking millennium is Florida -5.5. Because I think AR-15 has improved. I think that he's still not a great pure quarterback, but he's a baller. He's a playmaker. Mm-hmm. The Florida defense looked really good on Saturday in the swamp. There is no chance that Kentucky wins this football game.
This game is at night in the swamp. What a treat for Florida to open up with two. Going to be absolutely rocking environments, rocking games. I hope they get every recruit out there to those games because that's going to be another big-time visit, and this it could end up being a big-time win. I have Florida winning as well. I didn't realize Kentucky was that bad, but what a treat for Florida, Zach.
I'm telling you, and then they get South Florida at home, and then they got the big matchup, the rivalry game with Tennessee. And that honestly, if they can win this game like I think they will beat South Florida. If they can find a way to beat Tennessee, Florida's sitting 4-0. They have beaten Tennessee, Kentucky, and Utah already. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at this team like, holy shit. Like, this is already a ridiculous turnaround year for Billy Napier.
Like a legitimate top 10 team, if that is the case, based on kind of what the resume is in terms of where they're going to be ranked, Zach. You know that's right. The committee will put them there, and then kind of all eyes will be pointed or kind of looking at that October 29th matchup when they go to Georgia, should be kind of another rocking game. They pulled the draw. They have the toughest preseason schedule out of all teams in Power Five.
Yeah, their first 4 weeks are ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Like ridiculous. And again, just a treat for Florida, like back-to-back night swamp games, Zach. And now this conversation that could be the loudest place in the SEC.
Keep in mind, like I got some texts from some people that I still talk to that work at Florida. They were like, holy shit. Like the swamp is back. Cause it went through a lull there where attendance was low. I mean, they sold out every game when we were there, and it went through where the attendance dipped. You know, it wasn't that rowdy of an environment when the swamp was rocking. You know, back in Steve Spurrier days, back when Urban was there and winning national championships, like that place might have been the hardest place to play in college football. It was that or LSU. And that's what any opposing team would say. It fell off the map, and it sounds like they're back. The swamp is back.
They're back, and obviously LSU's not. So that, to me, that should be the loudest stadium, most difficult place to play in the SEC. And the fact that they get this game at home is just even bigger, and it should parlay into recruiting. Hey, G5 Billy. Billy's got him balling. I'm taking Florida as well. Want to hit a couple of these super chats, Zach, and then you know what we got to do? Because, you know, given your background and our background, we got to talk Ohio State.
Yeah.
Well, not really my background, obviously. Like, I live in Akron. Never went to Ohio State. Been to one Ohio State game, went to Akron, Ohio State. 20-2, Todd Beckman game, I believe. Brian, thank you for the two a day and wake up till game two.
Gotta love it, man. College football season's here.
Hashtag menace. Thank you, Brian. We appreciate you greatly. Again, we try to hit all the super chats. Oh, geez. The only man that can save LSU is Rush Probst. Get him in here and pay him whatever he wants. Hoover for life.
Oh, that would be awesome. If Rush Probst got the LSU job, it would be the best. I mean, best day ever.
That would be in the new college football, who's stopping him?
Right.
What's Rich Rod up to? That reminded me.
Fuck if I know.
Is Rich Rod coaching right now?
I have no idea.
I'm trying to. Well, in my head, I like to build these like staffs that like aren't coaching right now, like the best possible staff. Rich Rod was ahead of his time. He's like the Fetty Wap of a college.
He's at Jacksonville State.
Oh, that's right. Speaking of Jacksonville State, hey, you know the Menace Generals chat. They dropped on me that Georgia Tech might be in on Deion. And if that's the case, we're changing this to a Georgia Tech show. We already got the colors right.
I'm telling you right now, if Deion goes to Georgia Tech, RIP college football, he will fucking recruit Hotlanta. And that would be nuts.
I fucking love Georgia Tech. Bro, could you imagine Deion Sanders with Jeff Sims? He needs to petition for all his years of eligibility back if Deion Sanders gets there. Thank you, Garrett, for the five. If it comes down to elite quarterback play, keeping the defense honest, I don't need a great run game, just enough to keep them on their toes. And Zach said turnovers. That's exactly it.
That's
you
it.
Need elite quarterback play and some turnovers.
That's it.
Thank you, D Money, for the five. What has been the best coach game on both sides that you can remember? A game where both sides just kept making great adjustments.
I think, you know, the game with Bama was probably the best game I've been a part of when it comes to both sides, because both teams were so well coached. Mm-hmm. Both game plans were so well thought out. And those kids were in the right spot, and it came down to execution. And that's really what you look for, right? You don't like, you look at when we beat Penn State in overtime and Joey Bosa sacked Christian Hackenberg. Like, that was not a well-coached game by Penn State, right? They had a running back blocking Joey Bosa. That would have never, ever fucking happened if you're playing a Nick Saban team. So the best coached game I've ever been a part of was against Alabama. I think it was the two best staffs in college football. Every position group was coached up. There was no like mental errors, none of that. It was truly like, here's the game plan. Devin Smith's on the field in a passing down. We're going to play two man to double cover him. It's just, unfortunately, Devin out executed your double coverage, right? But it was well coached. It was absolutely what they should have done, but Devin made the play. He executed, right? Evan Spencer threaded a pass. Like, that trick play, that reverse pass, was supposed to be wide open, but they were so well coached and so well, you know, taught that Mike was covered. Yeah. And Jalen Marshall was getting pressure. Evan Spencer was getting pressured. Jalen Marshall had to pick up a block that he shouldn't have had to pick up, because they were so well coached that it had to be executed perfectly. And it was. And that's why it worked. Right. So that's the best coach game I've been a part of, because it all came down to execution.
Yeah. One of the best coach games, Zach, I know this question's for me, but when I think about incredibly coached games, well, first of all, that Alabama staff, do people realize, well, who was on that staff?
It's like, absurd. What
was it? Mario Cristobal. Was Charlie Strong on that staff?
No. It was Mario. Oh God, Mario Cristobal, Kirby Smart,
Lane Kiffin,
Mel Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
There might have been another one too.
Like,
Billy Napier. Billy Napier was a receiver coach.
That's a fucking staff.
Nuts.
Like, that's an unbelievable staff. Really, really well coached game. Exactly the game that I think about often, more often than not. In terms of like making crazy coaching adjustments, is the Jake Fromm versus Jalen Hurts national title game that ended in Tua coming out the second half. I just thought both defenses that entire game were just so well coached, and kind of the adjustments that both made on the fly was very top tier. And that was kind of the first time it was like Nick Saban versus like Nick Saban's, like, you know, the prodigy taking on each other. So that's kind of the game I reference in terms of like great coaching. Obviously, I wasn't a part of it, and I'm just walking through a fan's eye. Thank you, T, for the five. Zach, when the 12-game playoff hits, in your opinion, how many games will it take a team to win the playoff along with the regular season? We could probably afford two losses.
We haven't really talked about it, but I'm not a fan of 12 teams at all, but all you really did was you created play-in games. And the top four teams that would have made the playoffs, right, they get byes, so they will play one extra game, right? Instead of winning two games, you're going to have to win three games, because you're going to take eight teams. They're all going to play in the play-in round to get to an eight-team playoff. So I'm not that against it, because I thought an eight-team playoff was about accurate. And all they did was created a play-in game to get to the eight-team playoff, right? That's all they truly did. But you look at a game like Oregon, Georgia. What was Oregon? 11th in the country? That's the type of game you're going to get now. Yeah. You're going to get an elite team against a team that doesn't have any business being there. So I'm not as adamantly against it as I was when it first got announced, because I thought an 8-team playoff was perfect, but I kind of understand what they did, right? One, and they're going to create a lot more revenue. Those eight teams that have to play in to get into the 8-team playoff are going to get to host a playoff game. So I'm not totally against it, but what you've done now is you've created less parity or less importance on the regular season. Like, if you're Ohio State, you can certainly drop one game, right? Because if you lose one game to Michigan and don't make the Big Ten championship game, you're going to make it at large. If you lose to someone else and make the Big Ten championship and win it, you could lose two regular season games, right? Mm-hmm. You could, the Oregon game doesn't matter at all, right? that they lost last year. This year's Notre Dame game doesn't fucking matter because it's not a conference game. As long as you get to Indianapolis and win, you're in. So the other side of that argument, Chris, is I've been critical of the committee in how they seed teams in the playoffs, because sometimes they create a much harder path for someone, right? Yeah. So it will matter where you're seeded, right? Do you have to play a play-in game? That's tough. That's a whole extra game against a pretty good team, right? And then even further to the point, who are you catching in that first round? Because now you have to win. I mean, the odds that someone wins four in a row against this quality of a pool is slim to none.
Slim to none. I do believe that the four teams that kind of get the bye are the conference champions as well. So it just kind of shrinks the games played type deal. So you wouldn't have a conference champion then having to be like the number 8 or 9 team and then kind of work their way up. It is intriguing. I would be more a fan of it, Zach, if there were just like a couple more Lamar Jacksons walking around, because that's the ultimate equalizer. Like if Lamar Jackson was around, it's like, okay, like that's an 8 seed that can wreak some havoc, because if that kid gets hot. So that's kind of where I'm at with that. But even then, Lamar Jackson still lost to Clemson, I believe. So, I mean, who knows? Additionally, you know who has the most top 12 finishes since the college football era started? Ohio State. Yeah, going into the final selection. They have one more than Alabama. Fuck Bama. Derek, thanks for the 5. Thanks, gentlemen. My guy, D. West.
Appreciate you, D.
This bud's for you.
Here you go, Chris. I'm going to Venmo that over to you right now so you can get your post-show Hennessy.
Oh, my goodness. Uh-oh. My son's team lost 48-6. Can you come help coach?
Oh, boy.
I can fake a birth certificate. How old are the kids?
Yeah, how old is your son's team? I want to coach youth football. I had so much fun last year doing it. It's a blast.
Our guy Bryce, thank you for the $2. Levis has the better game. Florida wins by 10. That's almost worse. don't you always hate that? Oh, my goodness. The swamp is back when Jack Miller gets there. Coincidence? I think not. You know what? As a matter of fact, I think Bryce is on to something.
Somebody find me a Reddit study. Jack Miller brought the juice to the swamp.
Okay. Adam, thank you for the 5. Michigan, Ohio State go into the game undefeated. Does the loser of that game still make the playoff, and do we see a possible rematch? That'd be tricky. It'd be like Georgia-Bama.
Well,
the issue is the Michigan loss last
year. There's so much more importance on what the landscape looks like. Like, is USC undefeated and making the playoffs? Then now that's one spot. The winner of that game gets the other spot, and now the winner of the SEC is getting a spot. So now that fourth spot comes down to what is the loser, and the SEC championship loser look like? Because then they'll have to make a decision. Do they pick Georgia or Michigan, right? Do they pick Alabama or Ohio State? Like they have to make a decision for that fourth spot. And I think that's kind of the argument towards expanding the playoffs, but it'll depend on the landscape and it'll depend on how they lose. Do they lose on a last second field goal of a fucking great game? Well, evenly matched game. And if they do, I think there's a lot of emphasis that should be put on the fact that it was a one score game. That game could go either way. They absolutely belong. If either team, Ohio State or Michigan, loses the way they have the last two times, right? When Dwayne Haskins hung a billion on them, or Justin Fields hung a billion on them. And then last year, how Michigan beat down Ohio State the way they did. I don't think that the loser goes. I don't think they get in.
I think for it to happen, Zach, and this is why I think no, I think for it to happen, both teams will have to be ranked inside the top 3.
Yeah, probably.
And that'll be really tricky, because like, do you think Georgia will get placed ahead? I mean, Michigan will get placed ahead of Georgia or Bama.
Well, here's the thing. If USC loses two games, there's a great chance that it is a two Big Ten, two SEC team playoff. That's just reality. Unless you're buying the Clemson magazine hype. I don't see who else can be there.
Or the Baylor magazine hype.
Yeah, Baylor has got a chance because the Baylor Big 12 is so awful.
I think
Baylor's a good team. They look really good this year.
That's kind of one of the games I'm keeping an eye out. I don't really gamble, but if I were to gamble, I would bet on them to beat BYU, and BYU is the favorite on Saturday. Terrible grammar on the last question. Sorry. No, dude, you're good. I can't even read. So,
hey, if you've been in this show and around this show and seen King Bronco when he drops in, there's no such thing as bad grammar when King Bronco is one of your loyal listeners.
No such thing. What did it take for Cardell to run and not just scramble during the 14 run? Was it Urban, or did he just say, try and stop me being 6'5", 250? He just wanted to run.
He just playing the game. He was trying to win the game. I mean, it comes down to competitive nature. And there was times where Cardale didn't want to run. He wasn't a good athlete, but he's going to do it if you make him. Like if you cover, it's almost, here's the difference between Cardale and CJ when it comes to this. When people played coverages, brackets and two man and all these coverages where they're trying to just take away all these passing threats, Cardale wants to throw the ball for 1,000,000 yards. He wants to throw it 100 yards every time he throws it. Like he just wanted to sling it everywhere. When he saw that, he'd get a little pissed off, like, fuck you. Stop playing his coverage. I want to throw the ball. So he'd take off and run to try to get him out of it so that he could throw the ball. Right? That's the difference. CJ doesn't do that. He tries to fit it in windows, and it's just a different philosophy and a different mentality when they play those coverages of trying to get him out of it so you can throw the ball and thrive as a thrower.
I don't know if CJ has any fuck you in him.
Maybe he does. I haven't seen it, though.
I haven't seen it yet either. I mean, one's from Cali, one's from Cleveland, so... I'll let that
big difference between East Cleveland and LA.
Right. Does the 12 game make upsets mean a little less? Absolutely. I mean a little less.
Yeah. Especially out of conference upsets. Cause they're honestly irrelevant.
All right. Last one, Zach. Then I want to talk Ohio State. Imagine the hype around the UM versus Ohio State Natty. That'd be crazy. It almost happened one time before, but Zach had to go ruin it.
I did it.
Yeah. You fucking ruined it. Florida wasn't supposed to win that game. Uh-oh. Did he freeze for everybody else? Okay, ooh. No, we're good.
That was you.
All right, Zach. Arkansas State versus Ohio State. What are you looking for? What is it like going into the game? Because obviously we all feel like, you know, Ohio State is supremely talented, shouldn't lose this game, should potentially cover starters out in the first half. What is this week like at practice, and what do you need to see on Saturday from Ohio State to make you feel a little better?
Well, this is that rebound game, right? Like you all the things that went wrong in the first game, this is your next opportunity to right the wrongs, especially against an inferior opponent. So I would envision this offense to absolutely cook with grease. I mean, just throw the ball over the field, run the ball, like players making big time plays. And you know, it's not a lot to talk about. That's what should happen. It should be dominant on both sides of the ball. So games like this, I look at and I say, there's two things that Ohio State needs to get out of this. One, they need to get their confidence back on offense, right? They need to keep growing their confidence on defense and just keep executing your game, your scheme against an opponent. That's one. And two, I want to see some young fuckers play. I want to see some young kids get out on that field and start to get a little experience, because games like this, getting those young kids in, you don't know the potential value that could bring late in the year when an injury happens. And all of a sudden you've got to turn to one of those young kids and like, hey, it's your time. You got to go. And getting game experience in these games will make that player a much more prepared version of himself. And that's why games like this are so important. It's important to handle your business the first string, to get the fuck out and to let the young kids go get their experience, because you're trying to build a roster, build a team, build a position group. You're not trying to just make CJ Stroud a great player. You need Kyle McCord and Devin Brown to be ready at a moment's notice to take over and still execute. That's why you need these game reps. So these games are as critical as Notre Dame. They are when it comes to the long-term success of a team through a season.
Does the wide receiver room have the most to prove at Ohio State? And can you remember the last time someone said that sentence?
I can't. The young guys got a lot to prove. I mean, I think we're pretty confident that Marvin Harrison Jr., Emeka Egbuka, and Jackson Smith and Jigba, when all healthy, you know, they will be a dynamic trio. Julian Fleming has a ton to prove. Cam Babb needs to get healthy, right? Mm-hmm. And then all these other young kids,
Ballard
needs to show that he's an Ohio State level player. And on top of that, maybe they're not the answer this year. And so maybe the answer is a G. Scott Jr. or a, you know, Joe Royer, and they need to get in the game and show that they can execute and get that game experience. I mean, the makeup of this offense, too deep, not just the starters, not just the best 11. We know who the best 11 are, but the too deep, like what you do when this kid's tired or this kid's hurt. That's what needs to be developed at Ohio State offensively.
Zach, in the previous couple of years, we've referenced, okay, like Ohio State doesn't need to throw the tight ends because they have Garrett Wilson, Olave, and JSN. Now that those guys are gone, with the exception of JSN, could this be the year and the game that we see the ball getting thrown to the tight ends? Would you like to see it?
Oh, I would love to see it. I would love to see what some of these, you know, yeah, especially Joe Royer and G. Scott are the two that I want to see. Cade Stover, I really like Cade Stover. I think he's a really good player. He's valuable. I don't know that you need to throw him the ball a shitload, but I do. I would love to see it. More than that, though, I want to see Travion Henderson throwing the ball. I want to see him get the ball in space. That's the one thing I'm looking for at this game. Like, get him in space 3-4 times and then get him out of the game. Like, because it's going to be all she wrote if you get him in space against this team.
No, absolutely. It should be all she wrote when you get him in space against 90% of teams, because that's how good he is. We've referenced it several times. Zach, what receiver do you want to see the most out of this week? Bab, Fleming, or Ballard?
Bab, Fleming, or Ballard? I want to see Bab. I mean, if in a perfect world, I'd love to see Cam Bab out there. But that's more personal relationship and just his story and mm-hmm. what everyone thinks of him inside the program. I think he deserves to be on the field more than anyone on that team.
Heard. What about Marv? We worried about Marv at all, or is the offseason hype too much, or he's going to be a player?
No, he'll be fine. Okay. It's a typical rookie receiver. Mm-hmm. I mean, he went up against a decent secondary and just didn't play great. He didn't play bad. He didn't thrive. He didn't have that breakout game. That's all.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Zach. Do coaches have a number in their head, like points that we need to get up by before the backups go in, or is it kind of just game feel?
It's game feel. I mean, usually you don't pull kids before halftime. Just you want to get through the first half. Our whole thing was we always wanted to get through the first half, take that first drive of the second half and keep the starters in, and then as long as you score on that drive, then you pull everybody out.
Okay. That's all I got, Zach. You hit everything on the head. You answered questions that I didn't even ask, and so we just flew through that at the end there. You got a score prediction? You're not even going to touch it.
No, fuck for what? Friendly reminder, go to iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen to the podcast, even if you don't listen, if you're just on YouTube, still go to iTunes and go leave us a 5-star review and cook Chris in the comments. That's what I'm asking you to do here. And also like this video, subscribe, and click the bell. I saw a thing that only 10% of our subscribers have clicked the bell. Click the bell so you get notified when we go live. We're doing shit all fucking season.
Hit the
an insane amount of content. So click the bell so you get notified when we do something.
Hit the like. It's free, you bastards.
And check out our Patreon if you're interested. But I appreciate everybody. Chris, I appreciate you. Menace out.